Shir, we're going to speak about, it's an interesting topic, the Bracha of Pokeach Ivrim. I'm going to dedicate the Shir in memory of Menashe Rafael Ben Chaim, Zichrono Livracha, whose yahrzeit is actually today, the 23rd of Iyar. So, we do this. Get up in the morning, have our ritual, our routine, kind of run through it, and don't really stop to think about it. And this is a good example. Okay? We make this bracha, Pokeach Ivrim. Okay, what does Pokeach Ivrim mean? He who what? Open the eyes of the blind. That actually isn't, the word Einayim is not in this bracha, but Pokeach is apparently to open up their eyes, okay? To open up the eyes of the blind. So, without even getting into this yet, two questions should pop into your head, okay? Give me two questions that I think should pop into your head, yeah?
Blind people can open their eyes.
Okay. That's actually a legitimate question. Why don't we say, Hanotein la'ivrim lirot? Why do we say Pokeach Ivrim? Okay. Let's assume for the moment that Pokeach is, right, we'll get into that Vayifkachoy name, is the opening of the eyes, and it's a reference, right? Yeah?
What is blind?
Okay, what's a blind person? What's a blind person? Why is it Pokeach Ivrim? When I wake up in the morning, did I feel I was blind? Why are my eyes closed? Like, you know, if a guy's sitting in the room and his eyes are closed, I don't think he's blind. I think he's sleeping, right? Which is an occurrence we can relate to, right? Depending on the shear. So that's interesting. Why Pokeach Ivrim? By the way, interesting sidebar. What about somebody who actually is Iver? Right? Somebody who's blind. Does he say this bracha in the morning? Right? We've had this question in different forms throughout Birkot HaShachar. Does a prisoner say Matir Asurim? Does a servant or a slave or someone in Auschwitz say Shelo Asani Eved? Does a ger, right, someone who's a convert, say Shelo Asani Goy? So that's an interesting sidebar, right? And maybe it doesn't. What does this really mean? So let's think about this for a minute. Where is the first time I find somebody who's blind having their eyes opened, or blindness, or opening the eyes? So most people will tell you Yitzchak. We'll get back to Yitzchak. Yitzchak is, one second, shh. Yitzchak, in fact, it says, Vatichena enav, his eyes become dim, right? We'll have to talk about what that means, and is he blind? Because that's how we commonly refer to it, and what opens up his eyes? Do his eyes open up? Long before you get to Yitzchak, what's the first instance? Now, Tuval Kain is a good guess, but nope, earlier than that.
Adam.
When?
When he's alive.
That's why you can't let him get away with a guess. You gotta dig, yeah?
When they realize they're naked?
Ah! What's the pasuk there? This is very interesting, right? What's the pasuk say? Right? But titein gam l'ishayim avayochal. Right? Hashem says, don't eat, they eat. Right? Okay? Vatipakachna enei shnehem. And the eyes of both of them were opened up. And they knew that they were Erum. Now this is an interesting pasuk. This is an interesting pasuk. Isn't it interesting, by the way? We're doing these brachot in reverse order because of Rav Judah being away and whatever else, but really we have the bracha of Pokeach Ivrim, and then we have the bracha of Malbish Arumim. So one might suggest that there's some connection between opening up your eyes and nakedness or clothing, but you don't have to actually suggest it, you can see it. They opened up their eyes. Now let's think about this. We mentioned this yesterday. Now we're going to get into this. So Adam and Chava, we're going to call Adam and Chava Adam. Because Adam actually does refer in many instances to Adam and Chava, to Ish V'Isha. So Adam is told he can't eat from the tree. Does Adam eat from the tree? Of course he eats from the tree, because that's what we do, right? He eats from the tree. Which tree does he eat from? It's Adat Tovara. He eats from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That's an interesting tree. The fruit must be interesting. I mean, is there good fruit and bad fruit? Is each fruit good and bad? What is it about this tree that when you eat from it, you know the difference between good and evil? Okay. But presumably, they eat from the tree, their eyes were opened up, Vayedu, and they knew. What, how should that sentence be finished? Ki what? What should it say?
Tovara.
Ki tovimhe, or ki ra'imhe. Or vayedu bein tovara. They should know something related to good and evil. That's not what they know. They know that they're erum, which we generally translate as naked. And in fact, you know, the fact that naked seems to be a big deal. This somehow bothers them. Right? They take a leiteinah, right? They make these belts. later on before they leave Gan Eden, right? Hashem makes for them katnot ol vayaldishem. He dresses them in katnot ol. It's interesting what katnot ol are. Generally, you know, sort of, if you look in Christian translations, they kind of presume that this is some sort of skins. Like they wear animal skins, which could be, right? If you take this story literally. It also could be that they're katnot ol. Skin. This is the clothing Hashem gave us. Which would make it interesting. So what and who were we before we got dressed? There's actually a day on the Medrash that says, Al tikre ol with an ayin, ela ol with an aleph. Right? Assume that Hashem makes for them that they were, before they made this terrible mistake, they were beings of light. Now, by the way, if that was true, if we were beings of light, okay, and then we're not beings of light, what would be the most fundamental difference between being a being of light and being a being as we are now?
Well, whether you're physical or you're not.
No, light is physical, yeah. Most obvious difference. Let me ask you a question. How many lights are in the room? Quick, quick, quick.
Six.
Wrong.
25.
Wrong.
This
is not the light. This is the source of the light. This is the light. Light has the unique property. You can't tell. Shh. Remember this beginning of the year, but you forgot we didn't do Chazar. Right? You can't tell the difference between the light that comes from here and the light that comes from here. The property of light is that it's unifying. Right? Ki neo mitzvah v'torah o means, on one level, that Torah and mitzvah, fox, Torah and mitzvot, they bring us together, they make us together, they connect us, whatever it might be. So it could be that human beings were not meant to be other. They were meant to be spiritual beings of oneness. Don't know, but that's getting a little too Kabbalistic. You know me, I'm not the Kabbalist in this group. But let's get back to our discussion. So it doesn't say that they know the difference between good and evil. It says their eyes were open, vayedu ki eru mimhem. This is the first instance in the Torah where we find that people's eyes are open. And without getting into Tanakh and where else I find this, if the bracha says pokeach ivrim, I would have a hard time imagining that we thought of that, and Chazal didn't. So there are, this is an echo to something important there. That's the paradigm of opening your eyes. Okay, so now we have two questions. Okay, what does it mean to open your eyes? Why does it say that you can see? And second, what does opening your eyes have to do with being Eirom, with being naked? Then we get a third question. What does the word Eirom really mean? So we assume that they were Eirom, they were naked, so they get this clothing or whatever else it is. But this is the end of Perek Bet. If you take any Tanakh and you simply turn the page, you get to the next Perek, right? And what do you find? You turn back a page and you get to the beginning of the Perek, Perek Gimel. And what do I find? V'hanachash haya arum mikol chayat asadeh. Same word. Yet interestingly enough, nobody translates that as the snake was the most naked. First of all, because an animal can't be most naked. You're either naked or you're not naked. Like that's just, I suppose you could say this one has fur, this one has skin, but that's a shver. It makes sense to me. Chazal don't go that way. How does everybody translate that? Sly, cunning, crafty, right? And that makes sense because the context of that story in terms of what the snake, whatever that snake does, that's a longer discussion, right? It's crafty, it's cunning. So the nachash is the most cunning / crafty animals of the field. So how do I have the same word in such proximity? And in the first instance, it means crafty, sly, cunning. And in the second instance, it means naked. How are you sly or crafty, right, when you're naked? I would think the opposite. Right? Who do I think of? When I think of a human being walking around naked, it's not usually, you know, somebody who's sly and crafty. It's usually a three-year-old. I mean, that's how it should be, 60s notwithstanding, right? So, in fact, I have a vivid memory of one of my children running out the front door of the house, stark naked, as like 2.5 years old, just as two very frum guests showed up on a Shabbos, right? And their face said it all. Like, it was just funny, right? Because they were 2.5. It would not have been funny if they were 25, right? So what does this all have to do with each other, right? Now let me ask you another question, because somebody correctly noted that one of the major stories of blindness, of not seeing or seeing, is Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Esav. The whole story... Pardon?
No, he says,
to Valkyrie, and you could go with Lot also with the angels, by his sent Ruth and him, but I'm going to go for the big stories, right? You can take this idea, by the way, that we're going to get to, and you can apply it to many different stories in Tanakh. You could do a series on this topic. But the goal here is just to open up the box for the ideas. You have to do the work afterwards on your own, okay? So the whole story of Yaakov and Esav and the blessings and the Mechor, it all starts with the fact that, or the major part of the story starts with the fact, right? Vayi Yitzchak Zakeh Vatichen Einav. He becomes old, he becomes blind. Which, by the way, is interesting. When you become old, you do become blind, but okay, right? So now let's think about this. Yitzchak can't see properly. Now, why can't Yitzchak see properly? There are three major approaches to this. One of them is the most obvious. Why can't he see properly?
He's old.
He's old, right? That happens. You see people are old and they're wearing there, right? I'm getting there, right? Okay. What are the two midrashic? They're actually, I think, more like six, but the two major ones, yeah?
He's been fooling himself to see the distorted reality of the brothers.
Okay, he's not seeing straight. That's one way, yeah?
The angel's tears and the Akedah.
Okay, there's this very bizarre medrash, right, that when Yitzchak is on the Akedah, and somehow truth is about to be subverted, and the future is about to be distorted, and the angels, right, the definition of whatever an angel is, certainly within Divrei Chazal, the concept of the angel is a force that emanates from Hashem that has no freedom of choice. It cannot change its mission. It can't get more or less, right? Like the wind could be a malach of sorts. Hashem sends the wind to do its bidding and whatever else it is, right? So the forces of nature, there's something going on there. The tears, which represent distress, which represent change, represent death, somehow blind Yitzchak. Okay, that's a whole different discussion. But I want to go with what you were saying before. This is interesting. What causes Yitzchak to go blind? So the Sfat Emet, right, the Ger Rebbe, right, the grandson of the Chidush Yarim, 1800s, towering Torah scholar, one of the Hasidic masters who brought serious lumdus to the Hasidic world, has a phenomenal idea. And he bases it on the Medrash. This is very simple. Yitzchak is blinded to truth because he's eating the food of Esav. So in order to get Yitzchak to see straight and to do the right thing, by the way, Yitzchak gets all right. It says, Yitzchak Esav, Vayizak Esav Zaka Marad Meod, he screams, he cries, what does it say by Yitzchak? Vayecharad Yitzchak Charadag Dolad Meod. Do you remember that? Yitzchak is terrified, he's anguished. What does he say, according to the Medrash in Rashi? He doesn't say, I gave the wrong bracha. He says, Shema berachti katon lifnei gadol. Maybe I blessed the little one first. Take a look at Rashi. Very strange Rashi. That's not what it should say. It should say, maybe I gave the wrong bracha. I gave Yaakov Esav's bracha. That's not what it says. And there are two ways of understanding this. One, which is more difficult, is that Yaakov was always meant to get that bracha. He just wasn't supposed to get it first. The other possibility is that by the time Yitzchak says that, he's now seeing straight. So Yitzchak can't see. Now he does see. What causes him to see? Very simple. Rivka switches the food. Instead of eating the food from Esav, now he's eating the food of Yaakov. That's the only major thing that changes in between those two events. Now let's think about this for a minute. Who is Esav? Who is Esav if we're to accept this idea of the Sfat Emet? By the way, this is all allegorical. I not the story, but the commentary. Right? So you have to put this in its perspective, right? But who is Esav? Who is Esav? What is the province of Esav? What does Esav do? Pardon?
Edom.
He's Edom. He will become Edom in the Medrash, yeah? He's a hunter. What does he represent?
Materialism.
Cruelty, right? Vayi Esav ish tzayid b'fi, right? Vayavo Esav minha sadeh. Esav is a man of the hunt. Esav is a man of the field. Who else lives in the field? Hanachash hayarum mikol chayata sadeh. Isn't that interesting? The snake of the field is arum, and he tricks Adam and Chava somehow that causes them to open their eyes. Esav is of the field, and he blinds Yitzchak to close his eyes. There's something going on here, right? What does Esav represent? And how does this all get fixed, right? So I want to share with you an idea. Yes.
There's also like another source that supports that we're learning a lot about this in Rav Dabo's shir on the Bereshit.
Okay.
And he mentioned that there's a source. I forget which one it is, but it says that Esav like had a snake tattoo on like his leg.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange things connecting Esav to the Nachash. I'm not going to go deep into that. Yeah.
Okay, so if we're going to talk about Arum as being like sly and
cunning.
So. And we got to talk about Rivka and Yaakov who are lying straight to Yitzchak, and why eating food of Yaakov is going to make
excellent. In fact, not only is that question a good question, it's a more challenging question because what does Yaakov represent?
MS.
Yeah, Emet Yaakov, Titain Emet Yaakov. So we'll come back to that in the Q&A. We're not going to use up all our time. I'm going to leave that for a question. It's a very important question. But first, let's get the basic idea. Okay. So I have this bracha Pokeach Ivrim. That Hashem opens up the eyes of the blind. Okay? The first time I find the concept of eyes being opened, okay, is Adam and Chava, after they eat from the tree, Vatipakachna Neshnehem. When their eyes are opened, they see that they're naked. Right? They need clothing. The same topic of nakedness is also called cunning, because the Nachash is Arum. The same Nachash, which is crafty, lives in the field. Esav lives in the field. His food, according to the Sfatim, blinds Yitzchak. Yitzchak has to eat the blood. What's going on? So, I want to suggest an idea. It's not my idea. You can find it in different sources. We're just putting it together today. Seems to be a lot of chair movement today. Not sure what's going on. Just sit, relax. There we go. Right? Okay? So, when you eat the food of Esav, you stop seeing straight. What is the food of Esav? How is Esav related to the Nachash? Think about the Rambam in the Morne Nevuchim questions whether the story of Adam and Chav and the Nachash is a literal story or an allegory. Everybody, every piece, every perception, every commentary in the world of Torah agrees that Avram existed, Avram was the first Jew, and that whole story makes sense. There's an interesting question about the Garden of Eden. Is it an allegory? Is it Kabbalah? Or is it literal? So we're going to put that question aside. Having said that, the Nachash in rabbinic literature is the Yetzer Hara. The Nachash is that temptation that gets me to do what deep down I know I don't really want to do. Why is it that we sometimes do things that we don't really want to do? Because we stop seeing straight. In fact, one of the mitzvot in the Torah, Lo Tikach Shochad. Okay? What happens if you take a bribe? It's interesting that appears in a number of places in the Torah, and one would think that would be in a law book, because that's really halacha for judges. So Rav Dessler in the Michtam Eliyahu asked this question, why is it a mitzvah in the Torah, lo tikach shochad, if you're not a judge? Because think about it. Let's say you want to look up the halacha of whether you can play Monopoly on Shabbat. Legitimate question, right? And you're going to look up the halacha, you're going to see what the Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa says, and he has a problem with it, so then you'll look up in Tzohar's website, maybe go to the Bar Ilan, you'll find an Achron. Okay, why are you looking this up? I've never looked up whether you can play Monopoly on Shabbos. You know why? Because I don't like Monopoly. Right? I can tell you all the halachas of playing chess on Shabbos. Monopoly doesn't interest me. You're looking it up because you want to play Monopoly, which means you're already bribed. You are already predisposed to want to find the halacha. We're all bribed. We're bribed by the way we see the world. And what does the pasuk say? Lo tikach shochad ki ha-shochad ye'aver einei chachamim. It will cause those who are balanced to go blind. What does that mean, it'll cause them to go blind? It doesn't mean like all of a sudden they're going to walk into walls. It means they stop seeing realities as meant to be seen. Right? This is, what was the name of that documentary on the algorithms hidden in the web? No. If I open up an email that says that, we should get rid of Bibi Netanyahu, we should give peace to the Arabs, I'm going to start getting lots, there's an algorithm, I'm going to start getting lots of email. All the information I'm going to be getting is more left-wing. And if I open up an email that says that, we should put, that they should put Yasser Arafat in prison, I'm going to start getting more right-wing emails. Right? What is it called?
The social dilemma,
right. Okay? And we get blinded. And I started noticing this. Do you know that 80% of what you read, and sometimes as much as 90%, depending on which study, is your perception, right? I open the Jerusalem Post. I want to read the Jerusalem Post. There are certain writers I know. I like what they have to say. They're more right-wing. They have more of a perspective aligned with my own. Gershon Baskin, who works with Palestinians, who's one of the people who supposedly negotiated the release of Gilad Shalit with Hamas, has a very left-wing perspective. I just can't read it anymore. It's just the same drivel. Why isn't the right-wing guy the same drivel? Because that's my perspective. So we stop seeing straight. When you get blinded by the Yetzer Hara, you get bribed. Yitzchak is living and being fed by the world of Esav. And in the world of Esav, right, cruelty, the hunt, materialism, that seems to be paramount. So you stop seeing the world the way it's supposed to be. Rivka understands. Now, by the way, this isn't Rivka's idea. This comes all the way from Akash Baruch at the beginning of the Parsha, right? She knows something's off. There's this struggle inside of her. She says, like, what's going on? How come this embryo is shooting this way and this embryo is shooting? Who am I? Who is this baby? So she seeks out knowledge from Hashem, whatever that means. And Hashem says, oh, no problem. There are two inside of you. Right? There's going to be a national struggle. Ultimately, the greater, which she clearly interprets to be Esav, will serve the younger, which she clearly interprets to be Yaakov. So she understands that Yaakov is the future of the Jewish people. Assuming you accept all that, so she realizes she has to change the recipe. By the way, this is what happens to us. Okay? You've been now living for a year, hopefully, to some degree, more or less, in the Oel of Torah. You've been living in a little bubble. And sometimes people say it's time to get out into the real world. Maybe this is the real world. It's an interesting question. But you've been living and seeing the world through a very specific perspective. Now you're going to go to a world where the perspective is very different. You've spent 6 or 8 months here. You're going to go to University of Expressionist, and you're going to spend the world in that perspective. It will change the way you look at the world, for better or for worse. Right? So if you eat the food of Esav, whatever that is, it will change the way you look at the world. So because it changes the way you look at the world, right, you have to make sure that you're eating the food of Yaakov, that you keep tapped into whatever Emet is. Right? What does it mean, by the way? This we talked about yesterday when we were talking about Malbish Aramim. What does it mean that a person is naked? Why do we need clothing? There are many different reasons we wear clothing. Clothing creates boundaries. Clothing demonstrates identity. Right? If you see a guy walking in a green uniform, you assume he's a soldier. Right? But clothing also covers my nakedness, which means it covers the raw physical desires. It places limits on them. It reminds me that I need boundaries. So, v'tipakachnei neishnehem, they understood all of a sudden that they were naked. There was nothing. They were pure animal. This is what we talked about yesterday. So therefore, they needed to be clothed. That's why it's very much connected. The question becomes, what do you clothe yourself in? Do you clothe yourself in the world of Yaakov? Or do you clothe yourself in the world of Esav? Right? So that's what v'tipakach nesha. Now I can go back to the bracha of pokeach ivrim. What does it mean, pokeach ivrim? It means that every morning I wake up and I have the opportunity to decide whether I open my eyes and see the world as it's meant to be seen. That is an easy thing to say, is a very hard thing to do. What does it mean to see the world as it's meant to be seen? Right? Do you follow, I don't know, Rav Shach's perspective? In which case, if you saw the world the way Rav Shach thinks we could see the world, you would never get on a plane to go to university. Why would you go to university? That's like Tumah. Right? If you saw the world the way, I don't know, Benjamin Franklin saw the world, I'm not sure you would ever come to yeshiva. And they're two different perspectives. How do you decide what the perspective is with which, through which you choose to see the world? That's precisely the aim of this bracha. Pokeach Ivrim. I don't know what's going to come my way this day. But you give me the opportunity all over again to see a world with intelligent eyes. You know, I was just having, there's an alumni who came here this week, and we got into a long chat. He goes to Princeton. And he was talking about some of the challenges with, you know, sort of the pro-Palestinians, the pro-BDS movement on campus. If you've been reading up, you know that they tried to pass a resolution supporting BDS, et cetera, right? So, you know, if we had a long discussion, if you follow, you know, Natan Sharansky's and the new world, or is beginning to be accepted by the world definition of anti-Semitism, anytime you single one nation out as opposed to all other nations, that would be a definition of anti-Semitism. So if we're boycotting Israel, but we're not boycotting China, we're not boycotting Afghanistan, and so on and so forth, then that would be a definition of anti-Semitism. And that just seems logical. And all of a sudden you're sitting with people who don't view Israel as just, they view Israel as genocidal. How do you know what's real and what's not real? So ultimately, pokeach ivrim, Hashem gives me the opportunity to not be blinded, to see a healthy world. And that's a scary thing in the world we live in. Because there's a lot of fake news out there, and we don't know what we're looking at. And it is so easy. The Rambam in Hilchot Deot points out, if you think about it, that we get so affected by the environment that we're in. There's a lot of mazel in this. If you go to university, and the people you hang out with have a totally different perspective, likely that you will end up with a totally different perspective. So that's what this bracha is about. So that's a little bit of thought on the bracha of Bokeh Shemir. Open the floor to questions. Yes. Including yours, Ruvain. Yes.
Isn't it? I'm trying to understand. So, like, even if, right, I'm seeing it, somebody from an intelligence...
I missed the beginning of your sentence. Again?
Going back to, like, your analogy of the Jerusalem Post thing, right?
Okay.
So you have a specific perspective, and therefore that guides you towards a perspective that fit in with yours. But is that, like...
That's what they suggest. They suggest that we do this subconsciously.
But is that, like, an inherently bad thing? Because you seem to be describing it as, like, this is bad.
I'm not saying it's an...
In a world from a more, like, intelligent, less, you know, blinded by our own perspective way...
Well, I'm not saying it's necessarily bad or necessarily good. I'm just saying it is. Like, the first step is to be... Well, we talked about tshuva, right? We said there are three stages to tshuva. The first is hakarat hachet. Okay. So the first thing is, I have to be aware that there's a process going on and it's affecting the way I see the world. Okay? I don't... If I come across an article and the title of the article is Why We Should All Marry People from Different Faiths... Chances are that article is going to interest me less because I live my life according to the idea that, you know, you should marry within your faith, whether you're Jewish or Catholic, right? So we often don't realize that we're making these decisions and navigating. You know, Rav Dessler in Chelek Bet and Mechtam Eliyahu has a very interesting point. He says, everyone has a Yetzer Hara, but there's a range to your Yetzer Hara. There's a range to the temptations that you have, the proclivity you have to follow desires, etc. For example, the Vilna Gaon does not struggle when he walks by a McDonald's open on Shabbos. He doesn't struggle with whether he's going to go get a cheeseburger. Because that issue is not on his radar. He's lived his life in such a way, there's just no way he's going to eat a cheeseburger. Right? If I get on a plane and there's some beautiful stewardess, I don't struggle with whether or not I'm going to drag her off the plane when we land in New York in the Chvesnish, right? It's not, and God willing, it never will be. It's not on the radar screen. It doesn't mean I don't have a Yetzer. It's just my Yetzer isn't in that area. Now, there might be a person who really does struggle with that. So every time we make a decision, every time we pursue a path and get further down that path, the crossroads we were once at gets further away. That's good. It's healthy to know which path you're on. It's an interesting question. This year you came to Yeshiva. Did your path change? Did you begin to develop certain habitual behaviors? Did you make certain assumptions? Did you come to certain conclusions that limit your ability to make what I might think to be mistaken conclusions that you might have made in the past? That's all I'm saying. It's a process. Just be aware of it.
So I'm saying that this sort of like different perspective that you're saying, this more intelligent one, it's still a perspective. It's still just one of many perspectives, nonetheless. You
right.
have to have the tools to figure out which one is the more intelligent perspective, I guess. So
yeah, I wouldn't call it, let's be specific here, I wouldn't call the different perspectives more or less intelligent. I would call them right or wrong.
Yeah,
in other words,
perspective, how can it be right or wrong?
Well, so let's talk about that. There are two types of questions in this world. There are questions where you could be right, he could be right, and he could be right, right? You think that the best president was Richard Nixon, and you think the best president was Kennedy, and you think, and you'll all have different reasons as to what, and you could all be right. From certain perspectives, they could all be the best president, right? But let's say one of you says that the liquid in that thermos is kosher, and one of you says it's not kosher. You can't both be right. It either is or it isn't kosher. So if I take the perception that it's unkosher, right, then the fact that somebody says it's kosher is going to be of less interest to me. I've made a decision. How I make that decision, that's a good question. So you always have to know which of those two questions you're dealing with. You know, if you go to a campus and the question becomes, because sometimes they're very gray and sometimes they're black and white. You know, the question becomes, I don't know, should I reach out to less religious Jews by joining fraternities and hanging out with them and being part of the beer contest on Friday night, right? So you could make a case for saying that if you do that, you could be the ultimate Chabadnik. You'll reach all the Jews that never would be reached. I don't personally think so. I think that that would be a mistake, and that's a debate. You can debate that. And the more you choose one path, the more difficult it is for you to be in a different path. Pokeach Ivrim is simply the blessing that says, I appreciate the fact that I have the ability to see things correctly, and I don't want to lose that ability. Make sense? Yeah.
Is that kind of similar to the first problem?
Is that kind of... It's true that we said that Bina is two different things. One is just like the rooster in the darkness can see that the light is coming, so too we anticipate, we're able to perceive where something is going. That's a gift, and Hashem gives that to us, and we should be aware of that and cultivate that ability. And then we said that there's a second, which is an otenes achvibina. Hashem lets the heart know deep down what's right and wrong. So yeah, they're related to each other, right? Pokeach Ivrim is the particular sort of ability to open up your eyes and see it. Yeah. So yeah. So Yaakov. So how could Yaakov, the paradigm
and
of,
Rivka.
Pardon?
And Rivka.
Right. How could Yaakov and Rivka, the paradigm of truth, righteous people, trick Esav out of the Bechara? Okay. So I'll give you the short version. Let's analyze this. Where does this story start? Okay. First of all, the one most responsible for this is Akash Baruch Hu, because Hashem decides that Yaakov is going to be born second. This whole thing would have been avoided if Yaakov had been born first. So for some reason, he who represents Torah, he who represents Judaism, can't be the greater one. Has to be smaller, has to be more of a struggle, for whatever the reason, that's first of all. Second of all, one might make a case for saying that Esav and Yaakov have a fundamental disagreement as to the nature of the Bechora and the Bracha. There's two parts to this story. One of them is the Bechora. Let's call that in English the birthright. And Esav comes from the field. It doesn't say he's hungry. It says he's tired. Chazal have a field day with that word. He's the hunter. And he's coming from the field. It makes sense. He's tired. What does that do with the fact that he wants to eat? But okay. And he says he wants this soup. And Yaakov says, okay, I'll give you the soup. Sell me your bechora. Sell me your birthright. And Esav says, what do I need the bechora for? Right? He doesn't need the bechora. He doesn't value the bechora. Imagine that I come from the field and I'm really hungry and really tired. And you say to me, listen, I got a good piece of steak. Sell me your daughter. And I say, oh, okay, you know what? I'm so hungry. What do I need my daughter for? You'd look at me in shock. Why? Because you'd say, how could you sell your daughter for a steak? Yaakov understands that Esav will sell the Bechora for a piece of soup. Because Esav values the Bechora about as much as...
That's also tricking Esav a little bit, by the way. I mean, I don't think Esav is fully aware of what it means.
Well, so let's... Or possibility. What if the Bechora represents responsibility? What if Bechora represents the fact that it's not easy to be a Jew? That being a Jew means doing chesed. Being a Jew means the mitzvah on your parents. Being a Jew means limud Torah. Being a Jew means mitzvah. It means waking up in the morning, put your tefillin on. Whatever those things are. And that's the part that Esav could do without, because he lives in the here and now. But when it comes to the bracha, which is the consequence, the reward, etc., that Esav wants. So Yaakov and Esav are in a struggle, because Esav thinks that these two things are disconnected. Yaakov says they're not disconnected. Yaakov feels that if he has the bechora, then the bracha should be his as well. By the way, it's not clear what Yaakov thinks, because I'm not sure Yaakov thinks that way. I think Yaakov is more like, let Hashem take care of this. Rivka is the one who's pushing Yaakov. So on the face of it, the short version is, there's a much deeper struggle going on here. But anyway, and it doesn't seem that Yitzchak has any problem with having given Yaakov the bracha once he understands that the bechora is his. Right? But you have to look at the Mefarshim and see.
How can that justify the lying to Yitzchak and to Esau?
Because Yitzchak is blinded. Because Yitzchak can't see straight. Sometimes, you have a guy who's a drug addict. Okay? Sometimes you can't tell him the truth and say, we're going to take you to rehab. You have to manipulate him into rehab or he won't go there. So the question becomes then, what do I want to do? Right? Why am I doing it? Do I think Hashem wants me to do this? Rivka feels that Hashem... We've said all year, if you ask yourself those three questions, what do I want, why do I want it, does Hashem want me to want it? As long as you think you've got the right answer, you could get it wrong, but at least you're pursuing the right. If you go to medical school, right, I don't know, you don't stay Shana Bet and you go to Duke University, but you're convinced that you're doing it for the right reason and you really believe that Hashem wants you to do this, you could be wrong. Good will come of that. Most often than not, the mistakes that we make have nothing to do with what Hashem wants. So that's deep hidden in this story. Does that make sense? There's a lot to think about. Cool? Yes.
You mentioned the issue before of whether or not blind people could say Rafi Brim, so how do you think this would apply to that?
Oh, actually, the post can say that a blind person doesn't... Well, it's an interesting question. There are some opinions that say, the Ramah suggests, that a blind person does not say this. And there's some people who look at this bracha as a much deeper bracha, and then, of course, a blind person says this. Because if it's an issue of awareness and dat, right, Rashi talks about that, then for sure he would say it. So, not sure what a blind person actually does. It's a good question. I will tell you, well, it's a ridiculous thing to say. Hashem should bless me never to have to experience this, but if I was actually blind, I would say this bracha. Yeah. But I might find someone else to be motzi me, just to be yotzi all the shittas.
In Yafon, there's a restaurant where you eat totally the
yes.
blind with a
yes.
person, and your waiter is blind. And my sister asked, that it was a religious Jew, a religiously Ethiopian Jew, and she asked him, does he say it? And he said, no, he doesn't say it.
He doesn't say it. It's interesting. Yeah. So they're supposed to say, you don't say it. Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's an incredible museum.
No, it's like a museum.